Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Rabbit, Great and Terrible, by Nelson Chirita, narrated by Gary Furlong. Chapter 1. The Heroic White Mage. Fenton's shoulders ached. That wasn't a surprise. It was harvest time and the whole village was out in the fields from dawn to dusk. He was sure it was going to be at least another week before all the crops were in. Once that was done, though, they would have the harvest festival. That was always a fun time. Connor would play on his string picker, everyone would eat fresh picked corn and roast mutton, and since he was 15, a full-grown man, he'd get to have some corn whiskey right out in the open for once. Best of all, he would get to dance with Maggie. She was the prettiest girl in the whole village, especially when she trimmed that hair coming out of her mole. He was thinking about asking her to marry him at the festival. She was 17, after all, and people were beginning to talk. They said if she wasn't careful, she was going to end up an old maid. Fenton really loved her and wanted to spend the rest of his life with Maggie. Plus, she'd already promised that once they were married, she would let him do it sheep style with her as much as he wanted. Still, marriage was a big step. He was a young man, and not sure if he was ready to be tied down yet. He knew he would probably never leave the village. No one ever did. But he couldn't help but think about what a big world it was. It might be fun to go out on an adventure, have a little excitement. He'd heard lots of stories about adventurers who fought monsters and found treasures and rescued beautiful princesses. How hard could it be? He just needed to learn how to swing a sword and then... Right then he heard old Lady Bartwick shouting that a white mage and a woman were coming down the road. "Isn't it a little early for her to be drinking corn whiskey?" he muttered. The last time it had been a herd of werbels stampeding towards her. The time before that, it had been an air elemental stealing her apples. Well, he and everyone else in the village would just have to go and calm her down. Otherwise, she would spend the rest of the day shouting about a white mage pestering her over the dichotomy of good and evil or something. As he and the rest of the village headed to her house to tell her everything was fine, he spotted Maggie with her paw. She sent him a smile and a quick wave of her chubby hand. When he got to old Lady Bartwick's hut, he was not surprised to see her standing in front of her home with a broom in her hand. She was waving it over her head like a club. What did catch him and everyone else by surprise was that there really was a white mage and a woman coming up the road. Everyone knew about the white mages. They came from a faraway land called Avalon. They all had yellow hair and yellow eyes and could use incredibly powerful magics. They could call down lightning and fire, turn lead to gold, and they rode the backs of dragons. They always helped people and killed monsters. Vedric the wool merchant said he'd talked to one when he was in the city of Lexhaven many years ago. Of course, he also said he'd met a half-elven fire dancer and a paladin on a holy quest and a centaur named Evan, who sold special mushrooms. But an even more amazing sight was the woman walking beside the white mage. She had fiery red hair, eyes the color of summer twilight, the graceful movement of a high-born lady, and huge firm tits the size of ripe cantaloupes. If this was what women from Avalon looked like, he was going to find this place. The two of them stopped in front of the villagers. The white mage had an eager grin on his face. The big-titted redhead had a much more serious expression. He noted that the woman was a head taller than the wizard. The wizard took a step forward and spread his hands out. "Greetings! I am Master Waldo Rabbit, a white mage of Avalon. I wish you unity, justice, and peace. This is my wife, Alice Rabbit." The gorgeous woman, Alice, performed a curtsy that gave Fenton a clear view of the top of her breasts. "I am pleased to meet you all." As soon as she stood back up, the white mage spoke again. "I'm afraid I have some terrible news for you. I'm here because I've been chasing a great monster, an ogre. Of course, being a white mage, I intend to kill it for you. However, it's a very, very dangerous beast. While I will definitely slay it with my incredible magics, I can't guarantee there won't be any casualties. Some of you will probably be killed, so for your own safety, you should run away immediately, without stopping to take your valuables first." Beautiful Alice rubbed a hand over her face as he said this. Fenton and his neighbors looked at one another. The idea of an ogre attack was hard to believe. There hadn't even been any goblins in the area for at least 7 or 8 years. No one said anything out loud. Who wanted to tell a magic user he was wrong? Old Lady Bartwick was the one who spoke up.
"Ain't no ogres hereabouts. We got werbels, though. Lots of 'em. They live in the cornfields, always sneaking into my hut and stealing my slippers. Could you do something about 'em?"
"You have werbels?" The white mage sounded interested. "Their fur is a key ingredient in strength potions. Are they purple and gold, or green and brown?"
"They're black as night, almost so you can't see 'em."
"Black? Are you sure? Maybe they were carnivorous mole rats." Alice coughed into her hand. "Darling, I think you're getting a bit off track here. There's a dangerous ogre coming, remember?"
"Ah, right," the white mage said. "All of you should get as far away as you can, as quick as you can. The ogre could attack at any moment."
Fenton and the other villagers all stared back at him and remained where they were. The white mage then frowned and turned to look over at the cornfields.
"I said," he spoke in a louder voice, "the ogre could attack at any moment."
And perhaps hearing him, there was a sudden blood-curdling roar. Stomping out of the corn was a green beast at least 8 feet tall. Its skin was green as alfalfa. 2 yellow tusks jutted up out of its jaw. Its arms, legs, and chest were as thick and hard as an old oak. Except for some burlap tied around its waist, it was naked. The beast pounded its chest and roared loud enough to make the ground shake.
"Gronk smash! Gronk eat you all! Tear off skin and eat! Yum!"
The white mage stepped towards him and pulled a wand from out of his robe.
"No, foul monster! You may eat 1 or 2, but I, Waldo Rabbit, will stop you! Pyro!"
A stream of fire shot out of the wand. It passed over the monster's head and set part of the field on fire. The ogre screamed in fury.
"Gronk no afraid of pretty man in white."
The monster lowered his head and charged towards them. "Pyro!" Another stream of fire missed the monster as it made the ground shake. That was when Fenton turned and ran as fast as he could. He was not alone. Everyone took off down the road and away from the monster in blind panic. As he ran, he suddenly realized he had wet himself. It was at that precise moment that he decided to marry Maggie and to never, ever, ever, ever leave his village. Gronk was running between the huts as Waldo cast more fire spells.
"All right, they're gone. You can stop now," Alice finally called out.
"Foul beast, I will—"
Waldo stopped in mid-sentence and looked back at Alice.
"Are you certain?"
"Yes,"
Alice sighed. Gronk stopped his rampage.
"How did you like my performance, master?"
the ogre asked in a lisping voice that was nothing like the one he'd used only a moment ago.
"Was it scary enough?"
Waldo nodded and put his wand away.
"You did wonderfully, Gronk, like always."
"Joy!"
The big ogre skipped over to his master's side. Alice was rubbing her temples.
"Do we really have to keep doing this?
Are you willing to charm people and let me rob them that way?" Waldo asked.
"No,"
Alice replied instantly.
"Then we have to keep doing this. It not only allows me to steal from these villagers, it also builds up my reputation.
Dozens of villages will talk of the mighty Waldo Rabbit who drove off a monstrous ogre."
"But never managed to kill it,"
Alice pointed out.
"Driving it away is still impressive."
"We could pretend you killed me. I could do a death scene."
Gronk switched to his original voice and slammed both hands to his heart as he staggered from side to side.
"No. Pretty man in white kill Gronk. Gronk die."
He fell over with a loud thud. Both legs shot into the air and gave a dramatic shake before dropping back down. Waldo clapped his hands.
"Thank you, Gronk, but I think just driving you away is good enough."
"Whatever you say, master,"
Gronk replied with a lisp and got back on his feet.
"Darling,"
Alice came over to stand beside her husband,
"I really think we should stop doing this. We already have plenty of money."
She patted the bulging purse tied to her hip.
"And we draw a lot of attention. We can never have enough coin, and the more famous I become, the better."
"But what if we draw the wrong kind of attention?" she asked. Your grandfather hasn't bothered us in a while. Never mind any other people who might be chasing us. It had been 3 months since they'd left Lothus. In that time, Waldo's grandfather had not contacted him, and no more summoned creatures had spied on them. There had also been no sign of any pursuit by Duke Griffinhardt. They had traveled through 7 different countries, always heading north.
I've told you, my grandfather will never stop chasing me. The dead never tire, and I doubt he will suddenly lose interest in eating my heart. But they don't have the same sense of urgency as the living do. At some point, he will come after me again, regardless of what I do. As for other people, I don't...
Waldo paused and looked over his shoulder. There was an obvious expression of annoyance. He waved a hand.
Nunc.
Kleptus Daring suddenly popped into existence 12 feet behind Waldo. He was in mid-sneak, moving silently on the balls of his feet. As soon as he appeared, he settled back on his heels and gave a laugh.
You caught me this time.
And every time, Waldo said with irritation. I've told you, invisibility only works with mundanes. It can't fool mages. We can sense magic.
Why do you keep trying to sneak up on him anyway? Alice asked.
It's just practice, that's all. A good thief needs to keep his skills sharp as daggers.
Alice narrowed her eyes.
It wouldn't be anything else, would it?
No. It's just practice.
You're lying, I can tell.
He smiled.
What makes you think so?
Your mouth is open and words are coming out.
Have you finished searching this place? Waldo asked.
When they put on their performance, the entire audience would not always run away. A few brave souls occasionally stayed to try and fight the terrifying ogre. On those occasions, an invisible kleptus would go through the village and take anything of value.
Yes, I'm afraid it's not much.
From his cloak, he produced a sack and tossed it to Waldo.
About 600 copper coins, a few bronze bracelets, an amber brooch, and 3 iron daggers.
That's all. Waldo opened the sack and looked over the contents.
Nothing else?
Nope.
It's about what you expect from such a small place.
Waldo looked at him.
You certain this is everything?
Yes, believe me.
Waldo stared at him for a moment.
Gronk.
Sure thing, master.
The ogre strolled over to the thief, who put his hands up and began to backpedal.
Hey, we don't need to do this again. I put everything I found in the sack. May Wotall strike me blind if I lie.
Don't be nervous, sweetheart. I'll be gentle.
Gronk grabbed him by both ankles and proceeded to shake him like a rag doll. As he did so, a total of 5 silver coins came flying out. When nothing else shook loose, Gronk put him down. Alice collected the silver and put the coins in her purse.
You never learn, she muttered.
All right, well, let's get going, Waldo said. Together, the 4 of them left the village and continued north. That evening they made camp off in the woods. Waldo and Alice shared a tent. Kleptus had his own, and Gronk slept out on the grass beneath the stars. Alice and Waldo were both in their small clothes lying on their blankets. Alice turned to him and took a deep breath.
Darling, there's something I need to say to you.
Let me guess, you want to do Local Lord and the Innocent Farm Girl?
No, not that.
You want to do Dread Pirate Captain and the Innocent Maiden? She shook her head.
No.
Waldo rubbed his chin.
If you want to do Slave Master and the Innocent New Slave Girl, I'm feeling a little tired. Maybe we could do that tomorrow.
No, it's nothing about that. I wanted to talk to you about Kleptus. I don't trust him. Well, of course you don't. He's a thief, after all. Only a fool would trust him. After all, trust is...
A dagger pointed at your own heart, Alice said. Yes, yes, you really love all your sayings. But that's my point. I don't trust him. He hasn't forgiven you for what happened back in Norwich. I really think he would stab you in the back if he could.
Oh, I don't doubt it, Waldo agreed. That's why I carved the Morio seal in his chest.
A seal that's fake, she reminded him. If he ever finds out the truth, he really will try and kill you.
I don't doubt it.
Then wouldn't it be a good idea to get rid of him?
You mean kill him? Waldo asked in surprise. Alice nodded.
I don't usually believe in murder, but in his case, I'd be okay with it. Normally I would say let him go, but I wouldn't be able to sleep at night knowing he was out there. He really hates you, darling.
I know,
but that's no reason to get rid of someone who is an asset. My mother's familiar hates her like poison, and she knows it. But a vampire is too valuable to just throw away. Kleptus is a good thief, and I can use him, especially where we'll be going. But he's dangerous. He'd be a pretty poor thief if he wasn't. And what happens if he finds out the seal's not real? How could he? He doesn't know how magic works. He'll believe whatever I tell him. But what happens if he does figure it out someday? Then at that point, you have my permission to kill him.
Wonderful. I hope it won't be too late.
Well, if that's all,
he yawned,
I'm ready to go to sleep.
Good night, Alice.
Actually,
she was pressing her fingers together. Waldo sighed. He could guess what was coming. Yes, her eyes avoided his.
Pirate captain,
Alice blurted out. He took a deep breath and readied himself.
Arr, come here, wench. The dread pirate Waldo has need of ye.
Oh, please, no. I'm an innocent and helpless maiden.
Arr.
He pushed her down onto the blankets. Out in the night, Alice's cries could be heard loud and clear.
Yes, yes, take me, my captain, take me.
Lying in the grass, Gronk chuckled.
Well, I was thinking they were going to do Lonely Shepherd and Innocent You.
Chapter 2. A Little Skeleton on the Map. The following morning, Waldo went off by himself. He sat down beneath a large oak and began to pull various pieces of parchment from out of his pockets. These were maps. He'd acquired them during his travels. Many covered only a single country or part of one. Most lacked much detail. They showed the main cities and towns and the roads in between. A major river might appear, especially if there was only a single crossing point for it. Details such as mountain ranges, forests, swamps, and deserts were usually neglected. More importantly, the areas of wilderness where monsters roamed were also usually left off. This made travel even more dangerous than it already was. Accurate maps, even the inaccurate ones, were a precious commodity. Most were normally drawn up by locals, and could only be acquired traveling through that specific area. Typically, only merchants had maps covering many lands, and they often added important details themselves, such as an unmarked road, a minor river crossing, or a wood infested with goblins. Even generals leading invading armies often went in blind, relying on locals and their own scouts to figure out the lay of the land. Back home in Castle Corpselover, there had been thousands of maps available, covering almost the whole of the Shattered Lands. Some were hundreds of years old, displaying countries that no longer existed, and cities long ago sacked and left to ruin. There had even been grand atlases that showed you the entire world in a single glance. There was the Storm Sea, the Western Sea, the Inner Sea, and the Frozen Sea. A blob marked the location of Avalon, and all of Ostrogard was a blank space with a single notation. Here there be monsters. The Mouth, the Silk Road, Blackened Amora, the Rio Optimo, the Great Southern Desert, the Far Isles, and the Salt Plains were all marked. But even the atlases couldn't show you where Ostrogard ended, or what was beyond the edge of the Western Sea. 2,000 years after the Shattering, parts of the world remained a mystery. When he'd originally set out, he'd been given maps of every country neighboring Alteroth. He'd taken those maps completely for granted, in the same way he had all the spells, potion recipes, and seals in his spellbook. It was only after losing them that he truly appreciated their value. Most of the maps he had now were of countries he'd already passed through. The one he began to unfold was different from all the rest. It was drawn on a large section of sheepskin. Instead of showing just one country, it revealed the cities, towns, castles, roads, and rivers of 15 nations. The center point of the map was the Gold City, and it showed every route to it from every direction. There were even useful notations to help better understand the different regions. It was a genuine treasure. It had originally belonged to a merchant back in Kaspar. Waldo had offered to buy it or buy a copy, but the merchant had refused to sell. The information was too valuable to part with. So Waldo had sent Kleptus in to steal it, along with a small fortune in gold and silver. And that was the first time he'd used the invisibility spell on the thief. The successful theft had been one of the highlights of his quest so far. It was also proof that illusion magic had its uses. He was looking over this particular map when Alice came up to him. Breakfast is ready, darling. Waldo gave an absent nod. I'll be there in a bit. Standing over him, she peered down. Have you decided where we're going?
Yes.
He tapped the exact center of the sheepskin.
Oh, we're going to Torikai?
Alice asked excitedly.
I've heard stories about it from the merchants. The Gold City, surrounded by a shining wall of pure gold and ruled by a wise and beautiful queen. Everyone says it's the greatest city in the world.
Second? Altar's obviously the greatest. It may only be third or fourth. I'm sure Trezubon and Venezia would try and lay claim to the title as well.
Well, I'm still eager to go and see it. They say you can buy anything there. Will we get to do some shopping? We can actually put some of our coins to use.
He glanced up at her. If you want to make a few purchases, that's fine, I suppose. The reason we're going there is to gather information.
About what, darling?
To begin with, magic and spells. Since it turns out I have a talent in illusion magic, I want to try and acquire more spells in it. Alice gave a supportive nod and patted him on the shoulder.
I've always known you are very talented with your magic, darling.
That's not quite what I mean, Waldo told her. There are 8 schools of magic. Most mages have minor access to 7 or at least 6 of them. Having access means you can learn to cast the lesser magics of that school. But to use the more powerful spells, the deeper magics, requires you to have a talent in the school. She frowned slightly.
I'm not sure I follow.
Waldo took his wand out from one of the pockets sewn into his robes. He pointed it at a tree about 20 feet away.
Venti.
He felt a trickle of mana slip out of him and into the wand. A gust of wind struck the tree hard enough to shake branches and send some leaves flying.
That was a basic spell from the elemental school of magic.
Waldo slid the wand back into the pocket.
I was able to do that because I have access to elemental magic. Now, if I had a talent for the elemental school, I could do things like fly or bring down a tornado.
Given the number of wind spells he had in his spellbook, that lack was actually a great shame.
When I was growing up, Waldo continued, I had trouble making even basic spells work, outside of healing and protective magics. Everyone assumed my only talent was in healing. But invisibility is a deeper magic of the illusion school. That means I have a talent in illusion and can use the more advanced spells.
That's wonderful, darling.
He could feel her exuberance through their bond.
That proves how amazing you are.
Waldo let out a despondent sigh. Alice blinked.
Why are you feeling depressed?
Since she could also sense his emotions, Waldo knew there was no point in trying to deny it.
All mages can sense magic. When Roger created that false dragon, I knew immediately what it was, because I could sense the magic that formed it. No illusion will ever fool a mage, which means they're only valuable when dealing with mundanes. So illusion is considered the weakest and least valuable of all the schools of magic.
And the only one even more worthless than healing, Waldo thought. The dark powers are laughing at me again. Alice shook her head.
But darling, the world is full of people who don't use magic. How many times have you made Kleptus invisible? He's never been caught, and I know he loves when you use it on him. I think it's great that you can do it.
Well, it has its uses, Waldo admitted.
Part of the reason we're going to Torikai is for me to try and get more spells. There's a guild there that specializes in illusion. If I can get access to their library, I can acquire a lot of new spells.
That's fantastic, darling.
I'm also hoping to get information on finding a dragon.
He felt her enthusiasm sputter.
Oh, so we're still doing that?
Waldo lifted an eyebrow.
I told you and Gronk that acquiring a dragon's egg or a dragon was a part of my quest. I can't go home without one.
Yes, dear, I remember. But you haven't mentioned it for a while. I was sort of hoping we could put it off and just travel from place to place for a time.
I didn't mention it because I was more worried about avoiding my grandfather and any party sent out by Duke Griffinheart. Besides, a dragon's lair isn't easy to find. We weren't likely to just stumble across one.
Terasa be praised.
She drew a circle over her heart.
Information is the most precious thing there is, Waldo told her. Even a place like Torikai may not have any leads, but it's worth checking. At the very least, I can acquire more magic,
and I'm sure there will be other opportunities there as well. Alice narrowed her eyes. These opportunities wouldn't involve stealing, would they? That's a silly question. Of course they would. So we're going to one of the great cities of the world to commit crimes that could get us imprisoned or even killed. That's right. Didn't you learn anything from what happened in Norwich? Of course I did. This time I won't ask you to charm anyone. She sent him a tart frown. Right, because that was the big mistake. Not deciding to steal a duke's magical sword and sneak out in the middle of the night. I'm glad you agree. Alice shook her head and gave a half-muffled groan. Looking over the map, I think I found the best route to get to Torikai. He stabbed a finger at a crossroads near the bottom right corner. We're near here, where the Sunflower Road crosses the Ramshorn Road. We'll take the Sunflower north to Hampton's Crossing, then go west a bit on the Twisting Trail until we reach Kurgard. Then we head north again on Kingston Pike, and then go through the Valley of Certain Death, which will then put us on the Gold Road, which takes us straight... Wait a bit! We go through a place called the Valley of Certain Death? That's right. He tapped a point on the map. It's the only connection between Kingston Pike and the Gold Road. Alice took a close look. Darling, why is there a little skeleton drawn there? That just means there are some undead, that's all. That's all? You want to go through a place called the Valley of Certain Death, where there are undead, just so we can get on the Gold Road? It's really not that big a deal, Alice. It's marked with only one skeleton. That means it's a minor infestation. Probably just a couple hundred skeletons and walking corpses with maybe a handful of zombies mixed in. 300 at the very most. Any more than that and the map would have two skeletons with swords, or maybe a little ghost. And you think passing through a place with hundreds of undead is a small thing? He nodded. We had more than that guarding the castle back home. Well, that makes me eager to visit, she muttered under her breath. Alice looked more closely at the map. Darling, couldn't we just go southwest out of Kurgard on the Tulip Way until we get to Pig Slaughter Junction and get on the Gold Road there? Waldo shook his head. No. Why not? Look how far out of the way it is. Going that way would add at least a week to our trip and is inconvenient. Do you want to make things harder for us? When she smacked him on the back of his head, he had no idea why she did it. Ultimately, they agreed on the larger route. Chapter 3. The Great Rabbit. The caravan made its stop for the night. The 20 wagons pulled off the Gold Road and formed a circle, with all the horses on the inside. A cook fire was started, and the cook began working on the evening meal. They had set out from Pig Slaughter Junction early that morning, and had covered a good 15 miles. They were at least returning home to Torikai, the wagons loaded down with barrels of ale and whiskey, bolts of cloth, smoked mutton, and salt pork. Along with the salt pork, they had also picked up 4 travelers at the junction. Normally, caravans didn't permit passengers to simply hop on, but one of them had been a white mage, and you didn't refuse a white mage when he asked for a favor. Darren Malasar was the captain of the 8 guards hired to protect the caravan. He'd worked as a guard for hire for more than 10 years. He was good with a sword, and when he talked, the others listened. Being a guard for hire didn't really pay that well. For 2 months with his caravan, he would get a total of 10 silver marks. It was not much, but would be enough to see him through the winter at least. Being a gladiator could earn a lot more, but only if you were really good at it. Most gladiators never even made it to their 3rd match. What he would have really liked would have been to join the Gold Guard. Those arrogant asses not only got great pay and quarters inside the wall, but their work was easy. They never had to worry about bandits or packs of wild goblins attacking in the middle of the night. They were just policemen in shiny armor who got to lord it over everyone. Darren knew there was no chance he would ever get to be one. He was a commoner, a rat, born and raised in the rat's nest. To get into the Gold Guard, you had to know someone, be some lord's or rich merchant's son or nephew. Being able to handle yourself in a fight wasn't what mattered. He hadn't popped out of the right womb, and so wasn't qualified. As he ate his stew, Darren kept looking over to the 4 newcomers. They sat a little apart from everyone else.
He was hardly the only one who kept looking in their direction. They were...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?